Blog Talk Radio.
Hopkins, and we're once again in the house. What's going on?
Hey, what's good? Not much, what's good?
It's all good. It's all good. It is all good.
It's another day at the office.
Yeah. You know how this time of year gets it. School done started, campaigns going on.
In the silly season, It's August, so it's the silly season in politics this year is particularly silly, but America, you got the election you deserve, so I don't have really too much to say about it. I think it's all hella funny, actually. It's sad, it's tragic, but like I said, it's the election you deserve, so... it'll be interesting to see is this the end times election or what, but I am just a jaded observer to the madness at this point. But, you know, we talked about this show and what we were going to do, and there was a couple of things that happened that gave us this brainstorm to talk about co-opting of the movement. I have a question I want to put out to our listeners and those who are coming in. If you can call in and tell me one movement that has not been co-opted, and I'm talking about progressive movements or populist movements, that have not been co-opted by either the Democrat or Republican Party, and most of the time it's the Democrats who do it, call in and let me know. So that's your challenge, listeners, today. Call in and teach me something new. But if you're stumped like I am, and you may want to hang on and tune into the show today.
This is a true statement. Before we start getting too deep into this, I wanted to make sure that I gave everybody a definition of what co-op was, because there are several definitions out there. And, you know, we got smart asses.
We got smart asses.
Yeah, you know, we blanked out because I got messages coming across my screen here. But we got...
Already? They mad already? I mean, we ain't even been on 5 minutes.
No. But there's several different definitions out there. You know how we got these smart asses who will try to go to one of the alternative definitions to try to deflect. So I wanted to make sure that I put this out there so we knew what they were. Co-op, which is a verb. One of the first definitions is to appoint to membership of a committee or other body by invitation of the existing member. This is a parliamentary procedure that is used sometimes to bring additional folks into a organization or a committee or something. Then one of the other uses of the word co-opt is to divert to or use in a role different from the usual or original one. To use an example that was brought up in the definition, social scientists were co-opted to work with the development agencies. That means some folks say, hey, you finna come work with us to do this. Yeah, all right. The one that we're talking about today comes up under this one. Adopt or an idea or policy for one's own use. Such an example is great parties have had most of their ideas co-opted by bigger parties. Now, what we're talking about is probably a little bit mixture of probably the second one and the third one, you know, because what we got going on, and you see it a lot, is that somebody comes up with an idea, movement, or they're part of a cause, and so they put together a group of friends, and they start building momentum. And then somebody's looking, saying, or even somebody that's already in the organization saying, we could take this in another direction, or it could be this, or it can do that. And they say, okay, boom, the next thing you know, they start making power moves to move the agenda in the direction that they want to go. Now, let me say this. Co-opting is not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's a good thing because sometimes people are steering you toward a ditch. And some smart people come along and steer you into a direction that will move you toward more success. The reason that co-opting usually is dealt with as an evil thing because usually the folks that originally counted, the originators, the folks who founded it, are usually pissed off because somebody has usually upended them. So, and
co-opting is always used for a detrimental purpose. I've never really seen it used in a positive way. Which way has co-opting been used in a positive way?
Okay, I can sit there and give you an example. I mean, because I participated in some co-opting.
Oh, dear.
Cook County, Georgia. When our party was, this was probably counter co-opting that took place. It probably was counter co-opting because somebody made a move and somebody else made another move and then another move was made. But we had people that got control of, that was attempting to take control of our party to push a particular agenda that had nothing to do with what the majority wanted to be done, and they were almost successful. We had to come in and upend them to bring the party back toward something more sensible because they was going to take us down a road in which they were, the people who had taken control of the party were just taking people out of their seats without proper elections. There was all the rules were getting thrown out the door. They was even telling the state party, look, we don't even recognize your authority. We're going to do what we want to do. And we brought it back. We had to come in and stop them. And basically, and they had gotten legally elected to the positions they got that they were holding, but then decided to go do unorthodox things. So then we had to come back in and basically throw another coup. So it's not always been a situation in which, and like I said, most people see co-opting as a negative thing because it has happened. Most of the times we see it, most of the times we hear it, it has a negative connotation because the people who are being upended are mad as hell and they're yelling and screaming. Most of the time when a co-opt is on the good side, it's got different names. You know, we've had a reorganization of the group, or there's been there's little all kinds of little words that are used. Co-opt is usually used as a negative term, but when you look at it and you taking the definitions into hand, it could play both ways. It's just like every other thing that we do in the world. Everything has, some things have a good purpose and some have a bad purpose. Now, a lot of the stuff we're going to be talking about is the stuff that's negative. Let's talk about, you said I use the Democratic Party. We know several affiliated organizations and movements that are associated with the progressive movement that have been co-opted by the Democratic Party, or is or candidates or nominees or organizations that are affiliated. Fight for 15 being one. That was an attempted co-opt by the Democratic Party on that to push Hillary versus Bernie. And the unions end up endorsing who? Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. Why? Because they got co-opted. Co-opted in forms of they needed money, this, that, and the other. They needed resources. So they went, well, who was going to give them resources? or who they think could give them resources. I mean, we done seen that happen. There's, you know, and I'm sure you could come up with some states because you done seen a lot of them. Oh, she done dropped the call. She's coming. She's coming back. There you go.
Yeah, I was there, and I'm screaming into the phone while you're talking. Okay, first thing in truth counting, if you were a majority, then why did you? How did they get to co-opt you? Right, that's the first thing. And going back to that.
Yeah, and then I can answer that question.
And co-opting.
It takes place the way most co-opting does. Because sometimes it's not just about coming there kicking the door.
If you were a majority, why did you have to be co-opted?
Because if you were a majority, right,
you already had power on your side. So how is a minority able to overtake a majority?
Usually if you look at it, if you go back and historically look at it, the co-opting does take place by a minority group, which comes in because sometimes the majority, you can hold power and not be paying attention because you hold power. Or you could just be lied to. People will come in and say, guess what, we're going to do this, we can do that, we're going to make all this happen. And you go, you know what, that sounds like a good idea. Go ahead.
So you may have been the majority. So you were the majority, but you were powerless. The minority had the power.
Right.
Or something that you wanted or needed.
And sometimes that is the case. Think about it. We have large countries such as, let's look at South Africa. Back in the days of apartheid, the Africans in South Africa way outnumbered the whites. The minority had the power. You had, and you know, and even here in America, we look at how we operate. You know, the majority.
Did they really have the power?
We don't. So that's what I'm saying. Sometimes you think you may have the power, but you actually don't. And then sometimes you, like I said, you got situations in which the minority, there may be a minority come in, mostly new people, because usually if you co-opted, they come from folks that are outsiders. They come in and they say, hey, we got an idea. And you go in there and say, okay, that idea sounds pretty cool. We're going to let you try it. And then once we give you the reins of the organization, you go into a completely different direction than you had said when you got in office. We don't see politicians do this a lot. You get elected on one platform, and then you go in, and you basically co-opted the electorate. You came in, and you locked
in. I mean, we see that happening right now.
Yeah. So we got a caller already. Let's see what's going on. Go ahead, caller. Are you there?
Well,
I'm sorry. I was on mute.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Hello. Hey, this is Bruce Swan in Macon, Georgia. How y'all doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. So I'm glad y'all are talking about co-opting movements, and I was listening to the discussion with regard to co-option with regard to power and who holds the power and how movements get co-opted. And I wanted to ask if either of y'all have seen the Netflix series Black Mirror.
No, but I need something to bend down on. Tell me, what's it about?
Okay, basically it's like a sci-fi fantasy kind of series that's very similar to the Twilight Zone. Basically every episode is like a whole different story, like a completely different world with a completely different story. I mean, but they're trying to tell, like the Twilight Zone, they were trying to tell a broader message using this fantastic setting. And there was one episode in the first season called, episode 2 of season 1 called 15 Million Merits. Basically, these people live in this in the society, and we don't know if they're underground, we don't know whatever, they never see the outside, but they seem to be underground or something. And basically it appears that everybody's job every day is to get on these bicycles and pedal for 8 hours a day. They watch TV, watch videos, watch pornography, watch whatever they, whatever, you know, stuff is fed to them, and they can change the channel as they want to, but they got to pedal for however long, and for every, like, I think, minute they pedal, they get a dollar. Or they get a credit. Mm. It's called a merit, and they get a merit. And you can either save your merits or you can spend them on crap. Like, you know, you have little internet avatars, and you can buy clothes for your little internet avatars, or you can buy junk food or whatever.
Like Bitcoin.
Like, very much like Bitcoin. So, not to spoil it, because it's still a very great episode, but the co-option comes at the end of the episode, in which there's something about a reality TV show in which, you know, basically people can buy a ticket to try out on this reality show. It's like 12 million merits. So if you think about it, you're peddling one minute out of a day, which is basically a analog to working in a coal mine or something, you know, you see how long that can take to earn. They buy a ticket to get on this reality show to try to get a different job in the entertainment part of that society. Well, some real horrible stuff goes down, and this guy basically spends his money to go on television and threaten to commit suicide in front of everybody. And he gives, like, this long, huge, dramatic, powerful speech about how everybody is just sheep, and they're being fed by the man in the system. And, I mean, really, it is very fight the power, Occupy Wall Street. And then basically the judges just applaud, and they're like, we want to give you your own channel.
Of the Running Man and Network.
Yeah, well, that episode was. I mean, every episode is very different. They all have different things to say. But that episode was very much similar to the Running Man Network, a couple of other things. But, you know, basically they have all the power because they have the entertainment and they have the eyes of the people, and they have the merits because they're generating merits from their channels, the money. And this guy who had to pedal a bike for however long a day to get on this stage has all the power he has is the power to basically embarrass them on their channel. That's all the power he has. And yet they felt it easier from their position to basically co-opt him by bringing him in.
Right. I could definitely see the logic in that, because it happens to us all the time. To us under the guise of entertainment or the guise of, you know, for the country or, you know, for all of these benign reasons, when there's actually something quite malevolent and insidious behind it. So I'm definitely going to check this out. I need something to binge out on anyway, and I recommend season three.
Yeah, it's up to season three right now. I highly recommend it. It's very different and interesting. But as soon as I saw that, and as soon as I saw their reaction, I was like, it just turned the whole episode for me. Like immediately, I was like, oh, holy crap, this is the entertainment business, and quite frankly, for us politicos, this is the political entertainment business of, you know, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, you know, basically pulling in these people who work campaigns and whatnot, and making them political analysts and pundits just so they can sit on a screen and rant and actually lose whatever real influence they would have had.
Right. Okay. And then it trickles down because we, the viewers, the consumers, we watch it and we go, well, it must
watch
be
it.
True and it must be right, because that big
right.
head on the TV just said it was true.
That big head
right.
that I was following and that I liked when they were out there in the fight.
Right. And what we're seeing with this election cycle is that a lot of those big heads really didn't know dick. And that those very smart people really don't know a damn thing, and they are just as lost. I mean, I have, you know, I mean, it's kind of an occupational habit, so Scout and I both look at, you know, all of these news channels, and it's just, it is sad, but it's kind of funny. I sit back here and watch the news, and I'm like, they don't know what the hell they're saying. And I also extend that to the grass tops, who are, for those who are unfamiliar with the term, those are like those who lead organizations. Let me tell you, I happen to be on a couple of listservs with some of these grass tops, and they are set, there are email threads, they are out of pocket, unhinged, and don't have a clue. And maybe if they got off the internet and maybe got in with some real people, they know what was going on. And they actually exacerbate the problems that we have because their short-sightedness, their lack of connectivity with the people are actually making the problem worse. But it's job security for them. There is job security in suffering for us. We have been conditioned to feel that it is not a worthy struggle unless we suffer and that we need somebody to come help us. And we often reach our hands out to help for people who say, sure, we'll come in and help you. And then the next thing you know, you're right back where you stood from, where you're at, except you're broker. or you may have a bill in your hand and nothing has gotten done. And then we wallow, well, we did something wrong. We didn't do anything wrong. You were set up. And, you know, it's really frustrating for me as an activist because I see so many movements that have come and gone that have given so much hope. And, you know, Bernie's campaign was one of them. Now, whether Bernie's campaign has been co-opted or not, that is a point of contention between us progressives. My personal opinion was that he was made a deal he couldn't refuse. The Democrats were like the five families. So, and I, you know, whether he was co-opted, I believe his campaign was co-opted from the beginning and that it went its inevitable route. It was sad to see happen, but, you know, we can't deny that his campaign had a lot of D.C. Democrat loyalists in it, and we saw here in Georgia, and I can only speak to what I saw in Georgia because this is where I live, we saw the co-op coming from the beginning. So, you know, that's just one movement that was created to die. There was no way in hell the Democrats were going to let a political insurgency come and take away their choice of nominee. So Bernie became Hillary's best debate partner.
But you know what? Speaking from inside the Democratic Party, and I'm going to tell you, Scott will attest this, I'm probably going to get a little bit of heat for saying this. You cannot just start a campaign and from the outside and challenge the might of these parties from the outside and have a real great chance of success. I would say Bernie Sanders was very, very, very successful given what he was up against. Despite the fact that he did not accomplish his final task, he accomplished much. If the people who follow the Sanders campaign really won't change, then they've got to not move away from their parties. They've got to get involved in their parties. I saw some folks in Fulton County who were beginning to infiltrate Fulton County.
They've got to get in those county parties. You can't make somebody love you who you don't. Why should I have to fight to make a party that claims to represent me to come my way? That means I'm in the wrong room.
No.
Yes,
I'm not saying she has to make them love you. Because some of those folks won't ever love you.
I just want you to fight for me and represent me. And if you say you're for choice, right? And if you say you're for the sanctity of the vote, then why did Democrats run a campaign that went totally against that? Because behind the scenes, and we all know, there were mechanisms in place that were made to curtail or suppress that vote. We all knew that there was no real choice. The only choice you had was Hillary and them guys. That's the only choice we ever had. They let us go. They let the Bernie people go ahead. They saw it as a minor aberration or a temper tantrum, but eventually we're going to make you come our way. We don't give a damn what you want. So with that said, why would I – that's like me wanting to be with a man that doesn't want to be with me. Why would I fight for that? Why would I want to be
that
with somebody
that
doesn't
would...
want to be with me and that I have to force to change? And that's the whole crux of the argument for the people who are disappointed with the Democratic Party. You're asking
I would say
us,
that argument – well, I would say that argument, that analogy, I would quibble with that analogy somewhat only because hopefully in a marriage, that's a wedding of two people who
want to be
of
together.
Equal standing. Who are of equal standing with each other. But in any kind of power structure, if you are an insurgent group, you do not start out equal. You may be equal under the law, but in terms of power, you're not starting out as equal.
No, we're not
You've
starting out as equal
in.
Because we didn't have an equal playing field. But who did not provide the equal playing field? It wasn't our playing field. So who didn't have equality on the field?
Well, no, but that's just it, though. They still you cannot force someone because they still have their power. And what you're asking them to do is with their power, even with, you know, an equal playing field, you're asking them to work with one hand tied behind their back because you don't have as much power as they do.
But
and they're not going
to
do that.
If they really had power, they don't have power. They don't have power. What they need, because that is why there was such a cry for unity and to bring everybody together. And that's where the grand lie comes in. They really don't have any power because now we're seeing the freak out over the Bernie and Bus people. We're seeing the freak out over the Green Party, people who are going to the Green Party, which is where progressives belong. Then we're seeing in Georgia, this is what really and particularly fascinated me, all these Democrats got their underwear in the knot over this whole Johnny Isaacson, David Scott thing, you know, with Roy Barnes
right.
and everybody supporting. Now, Democrats like to talk about how we can work across the aisle, how we need bipartisanship, and then you have some prominent Democrats who came and said, Johnny Isaacson is my friend, we've worked together on things, and Democrats in Georgia sat up there like they were downwind of a bad smell. But this is actually what you promote and say that you want to achieve and actually how you get governance to work because we have a two-party system.
But that's
you don't have to work
but
with it.
It's not electoral politics. When you're running for office and there's an election going on, this is before we start talking about governing. This at this point in time, it's about you supporting your party, and you will rarely ever at this level see Republicans like Johnny Isaacson endorse or even spend or even donate money to a Democrat like we do them. You see it all the time in the South where Democrats will give props to good Republicans or so-called good Republicans. But those good Republicans never return the favor. This is one of those situations. That's why we get pissed off about it, because if that was the case.
How do you know they don't return the favor? So you want them to. In terms of, they may not return the favor in the way that you see.
You can go look at campaign disclosures, and if they pass the money through somebody else, they're not doing it. We're not talking about it at the local level, because at the local level, you'll probably see it. You'll probably see it at city council levels, county commission levels.
Which is how governance is supposed to be. So then it gets more polarized as it goes up.
We're talking about being able to control who's going to the House or who's going to be able to control the way lines are drawn.
But y'all are
happy
about the people who are not voting Trump. Y'all are happy about the people who are not voting for Trump and who are crossing over to vote for Hillary Clinton, because Hillary Clinton is more of their type of candidate, right? So that's not a problem for y'all. Y'all are embracing, welcome and thank you. You're doing the right thing because they're not voting red, right? But then you want everybody to vote blue. Y'all need to decide what y'all want to do. And like I told you, Scott, we talked about this before. Democrats have an identity crisis. And then when you see a group that does come up, y'all want to send in your little minions and take over these organizations.
When we talk about a few, we're talking about two, we're getting everything convoluted here. Because what we're talking about.
Okay, let's go back to the co-opting. Let's talk about the co-opting then.
Because this is exactly where we get there, how things get co-opted. Because we look in the situation, you look at this situation, we're talking about elected officials who carry a banner, who they carry a banner, just like party officials who carry a banner. You wearing a letter behind your name.
But they're not leaving the party. They're just saying in this race, this candidate, they're not abandoning the party.
That's like Michael Vick going on the football field and passing the football to the opposite player on purpose. The fans in the stands are going to be pissed off because you ran the jersey.
You play for your team.
Man, the fans,
so
we're
you're
not
saying. You're saying these folks are being played by the Republicans.
Exactly.
That's what you're basically saying. Okay.
It's a co-opting by them. They don't offer them something, this, that, and other. If we in any other arena that this happens, we'd be shocked.
Scott, is it a co-opt or is it a merger? Is it a merger of naturally of two groups that have a mutual interest? Is because I wouldn't say it's a co-op. I call it more of a merger.
It's basically the same thing.
Here's the question though: if they have similar but not the same, I mean, how much? I mean, you're saying that you know two groups that have the same interest. What if they have similar but not the same? And then how similar or dissimilar? Are you going to draw that line between merger and co-option? Where is that line?
That's not a question for me. That's a question for your party and your party leadership. Ask your people.
I want to know because you're the one who said it. I'm not certain that I agree with that, but you're making that distinction. I want to know what you mean by that.
In terms of economic policy, in terms of national foreign policy, and Hillary Clinton is more in line and more of an attraction to moderate Republicans than the progressive side. So for moderate Republicans, and I will call Johnny Isaacson a moderate Republican because what he says in public and what he does in private are two different things. That's how he managed to stay in the game for so long. And that's how they all stay in game so long. So we're basing it off of what we see in public. But when you look at the policies of the current Democratic Party and the moderate wing of the GOP, that Venn diagram in the middle, there's a couple of things that match. But Democrats try to reject it and try to say they're progressive, and then progressives come and tell you, no, you're not progressive on this issue, and then you say, well, you have to push us. And progressives say, we don't have to do a damn thing. We can go somewhere else. We don't have to be there. Who wants to be Sisyphus pushing a boulder uphill with a party that's supposed to represent them? And why are Democrats rejecting what seems to be a natural alliance? At the end of the day, y'all want to win an election. Right?
I think, well, not necessarily.
Y'all want to win an election to
where,
save the world. Which one?
No.
Because
well,
those two are not mutually exclusive.
No, they're not mutually exclusive. Here's the thing. I reject the premise that, and I'll continue to do so, that if you come into a party and you say, I expect to want these things, and the party says, that's not necessarily what
we're about.
No,
they weren't coming in as a party. They were using the party as a mechanism. The people who came with the Bernie campaign, they came for Bernie. They didn't come for y'all. They didn't come for the
Democrats. No, that's what I'm saying. No. That's exactly what I'm saying.
You're absolutely
right.
So the Democratic Party got their backup and rejected that whole premise. We like things exactly the way we are. We do not want you crashing the party, but we want you to vote in us in November, which puts the Democrats in quite a pickle. Can't have it both ways.
No, I mean, personally, I say if you don't want to vote, don't vote. But if you don't, or you
no,
don't
no,
want to
no,
vote with
I
Democrats,
did not say
vote
don't
with
vote.
Democrats.
No. That is the problem I have. When people say they're not going to vote for Clinton, so you're not going to vote. No, I'm just not voting for Clinton. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to vote. And there are some people who are going to abstain or leave. They may leave it blank or for the presidential or write in something. Me personally, I may vote for the ghost of Shirley Chisholm. I don't know yet. But, however, there's no way I'm not going to vote. I'm going to vote. And I hate every time this conversation comes, well, you're not going to vote. Nobody said that.
You're right, and I didn't say it.
You did?
No, I didn't. I started by saying, you know, don't vote.
If you're not going to vote.
Right.
Okay, my bad.
Okay,
but anyway.
Don't vote for somebody else. Vote for whoever.
But the co-op thing. But the co-op thing.
Y'all got more callers? Y'all got more callers? Y'all need to jump off?
I don't know. We do?
So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm going to tell. I appreciate your call.
Yeah, thank you, Macon. Appreciate you.
All right, y'all take it easy. Keep fighting.
Right. You too, I'll let you know about that show. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, please do.
I will.
All right.
Thanks for the heads up on that.
Okay, take it easy.
What's up, caller?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello.
How are you doing? This is Mr. Research calling from California.
I feel like a million ain't got a dime. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Here's something that's concerning. When you watch Fox News, what they do is called spinning, which means that they don't stay on topic. They create a new topic, or they misquote what a person has said, and the conversations get convoluted because the person's constantly spinning. It appears that some of the conversation I was listening to, one of the ladies seems to keep interrupting to spin to something she partially heard and then creating a new conversation and then have to constantly be dragged back to know that nobody said that, that isn't what was said. And the conversation...
There's only one lady, and that would be me.
Well, the other person's a lady, right?
No, there's only, as far as I know, there's only one woman. But scouting, that was a dude we were on the phone with, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
but I'm the only woman, and judging from your comments, you're referring to me.
Okay. Well, it's like things get lost in a conversation where, and don't take it personal. This is just me addressing the debate y'all had.
I never take it personal.
It gets convoluted.
True.
It comes down to this, what I think the gentleman was trying to say, or maybe he wasn't, but it comes down to this. If people want stuff to change it on the local level first. Trying to go to the higher part of stuff to get stuff changed is a fantasy. Now, to his point, you can go into a party, and this is something you disagreed with, you can go into a party if you have enough power of the people and go and disrupt it or change it. It happened to the Whig Party years ago, which gave birth to the Republicans. It happened to the Democrats, which changed it from Dixiecrats to Democrats. So it does happen. But
If I could stop you right there, there was also another change that was done by the Clintons. That was not the only change from Dixiecrats going to Democrats. There was another change that really caused a lot of the problems that the Democratic Party has caused. It's really been self-inflicted damage because of their policy, because of the Clinton era and their triangulation they made to more of the Democratic Party. Most of the policies that is part of Bill Clinton's legacy were actually what the GOP wanted. But the greatest trick that you would pull since it was Democrat, oh, yeah, it was great because Democrats did it. So, yeah, messaging is important, and how things are put out there are important. But I'm not giving anybody a pass, particularly the Democrats. And, yes, I am harsh on the Democrats.
Right.
I'm very harsh on them because they have claimed, they have staked claim to me as a woman, to me as a black person. They have staked the claim. They said, I am your party and you represent me. So if I come to you and say them they're lies and you tell me, no. See, what you want is not what you want. What you want is this. Then I have a problem because that's not where I belong. So the whole issue for me is not really, and I agree with you on some, I agree with you on a lot of points. Was it prudent for Bernie to try and go in and bum rush the Democratic Party? Well, in hindsight now, that was wrong. I mean, you were asking power to concede, and we all know what Frederick Douglass told us about power conceding, right? But had he not done that, then the scenario would have been that Bernie would not have gotten as far as he would have as an independent because the Democrats would have immediately given him the Ralph Nader treatment, even though they're doing that now. They've just transferred that to Jill Stein. So either way, the outcome was not going to be good for Bernie Sanders, but I appreciate him for lighting that fire and for people really looking around and saying, you know, you're really not right for me. And for me, the biggest thing was for progressives to discover that this was not their home. It never has been. For all of those going to the Green Party, they should have been to the Green Party years ago. However, because movements have been co-opted, progressive movements in particular, and they have been told, you know, they are the whisperers, right? And they whisper this, no, we want to do this. And the very serious people in the Beltline say we should do this, which actually is putting you back on the plantation. So,
yeah, but with that 3-minute speech you just made, that isn't really
altogether true. Well, it's my show, so I can do that.
No, I understand. Yeah. I'm just calling it what it is. I mean,
snark, you know? I mean, that
I
was
mean,
kind of snark.
But you got to understand, you've been doing it too.
It's my show.
Okay, so you can be snarky to the callers. Callers can't be snarky. Okay, all right. No problem. Your rules. I will obey your rules.
I mean, that's how the Democrats roll, right? That's what you say the Democrats are doing. It's our rule. So the Democrats can do it, but if I do it, I'm wrong.
All parties do that. But let me
everybody does it. Everybody does it.
Let me make this final point, which you seem to have avoided. Local. People are not
local is great. I agree with you. I don't miss the point. I get that point. Local matters. But what happens with local starts out one way. Local starts out. I mean, Scout can probably tell you this too. There's a theory. You get people who come in who are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, we're going to change the world. And then, after they've been in the game for a minute, and I have a theory, and it's usually right, 2 cycles and then they turn to the establishment. Then they start, all that fire seems to be gone. And we've seen it time after time after time.
And every revolution, and in every revolution that has ever taken place, you come in, and within a certain amount of time, and this if we were to elect you, or if we could get
there's
you
been no revolution. There's been movements, but there's been no revolution.
But even movement, revolution, however, because even look at, I will take the American Revolution for instance. If you look at
that was white nationalism at its finest. You do realize that.
Washington and Thomas Jefferson and all the stuff that they did as a Continental Congress And then you look and see what they did after they became a government. These were the people who ran, who fought, who started a war on no taxation without representation. And the very first problem that the American government had with its citizens, which started the Whiskey Rebellion, had to do with taxation that wasn't properly represented. Because there's a complete difference from fighting the battle or running through the movement and governing. And I promise you, if we gave you a position inside of the Democratic Party, or if you got elected to a position inside of the Democratic Party, and you maintained that position for any given point of time, you will find yourself doing something completely different, because it is different from the outside than it is on the inside.
Oh, even your job is like that. I mean, that's what it is.
I mean, you talk different at that. You talk different in the interview than you do 5 years down the road. That you've been there a couple of years now. You might have got a promotion or two. You're completely different. It's different when you work on. Let's say you work in a union shop. You go from the point of being craft to becoming a supervisor. The whole situation changes over time. I mean, so, yeah, there is some people who you would say turn, but there are people who turn for different reasons. They've now gotten any president of the United States, if you've listened to them talk about what they felt like going into office and when they came out of office, because they was not expecting some of the shit that they heard once they got behind the Resolute Desk.
I agree with you. I really don't focus too much on presidents, and I focus
but
on governors.
Like I said, even at the local level, I remember coming from being a regular voter to going into the party, and then going into party leadership, and then becoming leader of my local party. It was a completely different world. I mean, there are things that I have to do that I did in jail. There are things I've
what
done in jail.
Different?
You know, the difference was that now I had to preserve my job under the bylaws, was to preserve the organization. My job was to get Democrats elected. Now, if I talked to a Republican, best believe that it was something that was in the best interest of the Democratic Party. I just wasn't finna be friends with you just to be friends with you. We might go kicking and go fishing, but when it came down to politics, we sit there saying all the time, look, it's election season. I'm coming for your head. I'll fish with you when it's over. And that's how it was. It was like playing football against the team from across town. Your cousin might be on that team. Y'all love each other. But when we get on that football field, I'm trying to knock your damn head off, because it's my job to win for my team.
I understand.
Okay. Now, here's a question I have. Here's a question I have, and let's go back to that whole language thing. Because you seem to interchange parties for people. They're two separate things. So when you're working for party, are you working for people or are you working for party?
Your whole goal, if your platform is
And the question, when you say for party, are party and people synonymous with each other?
They can be, and then sometimes they're not. Because we have to understand.
How do we know when it is and when it isn't?
It tends to be locally, when you're doing city and county, it tends to be for the people. And because people locally can band together more effectively and take less time banding together to get rid of you. And that fear puts county and city people at bay.
That story just came out in Vox the other day about Ferguson and Bob McCullough, the prosecuting attorney. And while we did have some significant changes in the St. Louis area after Ferguson with the local votes, Bob Ferguson ran unopposed and won his seat again. And he was the biggest hindrance to the whole Ferguson thing. So
that's easy to explain.
I'm not looking for one, but what is the explanation? What do you think the problem was there?
Black folks do not consistently vote on a local level as they should. Other cultures do. other cultures. They band together even though they hate each other. The Mandarin Chinese hate the Beijing Chinese. The Northern Indians hate the Southern Indians. The different classes of Jews hate each other. But they know one thing is very clear. In order to get businesses and opportunities for their children, they must band together locally and dominate their areas. Black folks is the only one in this America that do not do that.
I would pose it that that applies to economics, and I agree with you, that we do not coalesce around each other economically, and that we still feel that, you know, because it's been ingrained in us. If you want better service, you go see the white man. You want better services, you go across town to the white man. We do not empower our neighborhoods and our communities economically like we should. How, and economic power does lead to political power. However, I would say after looking at the numbers in Georgia with turnout, and I would have to see how they're broken down on the racial level, but I would say the turnout in Metro Atlanta was way under 50%. And it wasn't just black people who weren't coming out to vote.
Right.
It was everybody. So they may have economic power, but and for the Asian community, while they may have mad economic power because they suck a lot of it out of and get their economic power base out of the black community, where it does not translate to politics. How many Asian American politicians do you see? How many Latino politicians do you see? Do we have a Latino senator?
We do have congressmen.
Now, here in Georgia, you see it's almost proportional to the population. When the Latino population for and representation is growing because they are finally getting of age where they have members of their society who are actually citizens and voting. You look at it here in Georgia. We only have Pedro Merritt. But then now you got Pedro Merritt and Brenda Lopez. And if for some reason we can get Michelle Jones elected, we will have three. If you start looking at that fact that they are growing, and then if you look at the Asian population, so we got Asians where we have BJ Pack, and if you look at the population that we have in Georgia as a total, it kind of matches up. But if you look out west, you will see a lot more Latinos and Asians. You will see a lot more of them in the representation out there. But then that comes again to how the lines are drawn. And you also got to look at where Asians live amongst whites at a higher level than anybody else. They don't coalesce inside of their own communities like they used to. They live interspersed amongst whites, whereas Latinos and African Americans have a tendency to congregate together.
Because Asians
are you saying that we need to move more amongst the white people? Is that
if you're talking about representation, then where we move in the areas where we can form voting blocks. Where the Asian population doesn't move and live together where they can form voting blocks. They're interspersed. They're diluting their voting power because there's a lot of them living. And that would happen if integration was to take place on the level that
Buford
we were
on. Highway, Gwinnett County. How many Asians are in Gwinnett County? How many Asian legislators are in Gwinnett County, Georgia?
Legislation?
How many local and state Asian legislators are in Gwinnett County, Georgia?
And how many are starting to run now? You're actually starting to see a lot. You're starting to see runs. Think about it. You had Tim Ure running last time, but he was in a district that was still majority African American.
Yeah,
that
but see,
was
the legislation
is so Tim Ure ran.
You said the representation matched the population.
The legislation is not a concern. The legislation person is not a concern. When you go look at Claremont, you look at that Jewish population. There's no legislative Jewish person.
How do you determine someone is Jewish? I mean, you can tell someone is Asian American more than Jewish. I mean, that's
the person in Georgia can tell you about Claremont.
getting ready to call in. She's calling in. She's waiting.
Okay.
So we're going to interject her in this conversation. Paula, you can stay on. We're going to interject her in this conversation. Hey,
hello.
How are you doing?
I am well. How are you? Hi, Stacy.
Who's this?
Hi, who's this?
This is Kenyette.
Hey, Kenyette. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm loving this conversation, especially as it relates to local politics. Of course, as you know, that always piques my interest.
Yeah, oh, well, so, glad you're enjoying it.
And since we're talking about, you know, can you give me, I know you've been listening, so can you throw your trinkets into this conversation so we can get it mixed in?
Well, basically, I mean, I think Stacey asked a very poignant question, and I'm a believer of poignant questions and poignant answers, and the answer to your question, Stacey, is zero. So I believe that when we talk about representation in other ethnicities other than blacks, I mean, we got to be very, very clear that there are other voting blocks that are not necessarily represented by either a local or state level legislature.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
However, we do tend to see equal, at least in Georgia, equal amount of turnout based on, I mean, among all ethnicities. I mean, especially in midterm elections. And that's where, for me, as someone who's more interested in the state level politics, that's where I think that we need to really start thinking critically about what the representation looks like. So, I mean, that's kind of what I want to add, and I'm going to let the conversation keep going, but I definitely wanted to address what Stacey was saying, is that, no, we don't. So let's keep moving. The other thing is about the Jewish population in Claremont. Well, absolutely, you have a very large Jewish population in Claremont. The concern about that, however, is that they are constantly trying to do cityhood initiatives in that area as well, because
they actually want
more autonomy in that area, and that's something that we saw with the recent election of a Republican senator in DeKalb County, which is something that everyone was taken aback by. But also, we got to be super, super careful when we're talking about representation, because it looks very different based on socioeconomics, based on race, based on location, and based on voting history. So I think we got to really be careful when we're talking about representation. So that's kind of my two cents, if I could.
Because it can be misleading. Because being represented can be misleading.
And since we were talking about co-opting, and when we start looking at those local races and we start talking about voting blocks and this, that, and the other, that is one of the easiest ways for somebody to come in and co-opt something. Because what happens is, let's say I got an area where there's a large African-American population, Asian population, Latino population, and I got somebody who has a alternative mode. They have a personal personal goal that they're trying to meet. And that person may look exactly like the group that is underrepresented. They come in and say, hey, come in and represent you guys. I look like you. I understand your pain. I'm going to represent you guys. And this person comes in. They talk a very good game. They promise you the world. They look like you. You know you're underrepresented. This person has stepped up to the plate. They look the part. They get in. Then they get in there and they start playing for other teams. Reason why Democrats are upset about David Scott, that's why we're upset about David Scott, because you look
that
like
happens.
Us. You from our neighborhood. You speak in
our
neighborhood and you want to play for other teams. You co-op. That's
out.
A co-op.
This sounds like you're talking about the lady that got rid of C.K. McKinney.
That's what this is about. You go in there, you look like you play the part. You look like you talk to this. You may even wait for us to get. You may even wait for other folks to give up, and then you step up in the way and be like, you know what? I'm there for you. I'm here for you. What you want? I got what you need. I'm your pusher man.
This is the question that I have. This is the problem that I have with all that. How long has David Scott been in office?
Too damn long.
Right, but here's the thing. But here, okay, here's the thing. He's been in there for quite a few terms, right? Mm-hmm. And he had a challenger last cycle, right? And there was a lot of rumbling that were coming out of, you know, Democratic circle. I mean, in the district, where there was people are not really happy with David Scott, but. You know, for lack of a better option, right? Hold on. So David Scott gets a challenger. What did we see Democrats do? Because the rumblings were there about David Scott. None of this should be new to Democrats. So you're saying that because he's not on Team Black? And he's not supporting a black candidate after all. How many names passed on the Isaacson race?
In other words, black folks should have made sure what he was about before just looking at his
folks in his district knew what he was about, but Democrats weren't listening to people in their district. So now y'all are starting to find out what the people in his district. I'm not going to say it's a majority, but there's a sizable number in his district who is not happy, and he's got a big-ass district.
Yes.
So now y'all are mad at him for doing the bipartisan thing, which on the upper echelon, but the whole bipartisan stuff is the crux of how, on the upper level of the party, how y'all are going to get stuff done. But y'all mad down here. You know, on the bottom because of the bipartisanship, because all he said was that he was supporting Johnny Isaacson. Clearly, nobody else wanted to run against him. And then Jim Barksdale came, and everybody said, who the hell is this goomer with your Argyle hat? I mean, your Argyle sweater and your golf cap, because nothing says revolutionary like a golf cap and an Argyle sweater. And y'all are like, well, we just going to vote blue, right? We're going to vote blue. We're going to go behind Barksdale because we're just going to vote blue. And then y'all get mad when Republicans vote red, and then you need some of those votes in order to win, right, in order to get some wins. We don't know if Isaacson is going to reciprocate or not. He just might. He might do it in some ways that we don't see. Remember, he's got to keep his base happy. So we're seeing some bipartisanship. Y'all don't really vote bipartisanship. Bipartisanship is how stuff is going to get done. But then y'all say he's not loyal. He ain't, you know, these hoes ain't loyal no more. And then you say follow us because we're the Democratic Party and we know which way to go. And then we say which way you going. Because y'all don't seem to know, and that's where I have my problems with the Democrats. Like I said, y'all got an identity crisis, and I think y'all need
that's
a retreat to figure this out.
That's just like the evil dude in Decatur. They wanted to sit up here and put him up in there and made Decatur worse than Pine Lake. Same difference.
Mm. So, you know, I mean, but the co-opting that has gone on, and, I can speak for how it looks like on the activist side. There have been plenty of groups here in Atlanta who have been co-opted in one of the three definitions that you provided, Scout. Move On is probably the most notable one.
Right.
Move On got co-opted, you know, after Jones, Blade, and West Boyd left. It was a massive influx here in Georgia. We had quite a few active Move On chapters that died on the vine, and every single one of them were led by Democratic committee members, PDA, Progressive Democrats in Georgia. We actually have chapters.
Mm-hmm.
They are all sat on. And we're particularly, and they're killed by just not doing anything. There's no events. There's nothing. There were active Move On chapters in Atlanta, DeKalb, Gwinnett. Gwinnett was a pretty big one. They're all dead. They're all dead. PDA, when PDA, the national organization, was behind Bernie, I posted, and I'll ask anyone in Georgia, other than the event that I did, Scout, which you came to, there were no PDA for Bernie with the We Want Bernie campaign, period. There weren't any.
Nope.
But when you look at who runs these, who's sitting on these, they're all Democratic committee members.
Mm-hmm.
Either they're saving all their work for the Democratic Party and they're just spent when it comes to these nonprofits.
When you look at it, let's sit there and talk about it. That wasn't necessarily been co-opted situation, whereas maybe block situation, because like I said, I'm president of one
What's
of
the difference
here.
Between blocking and co-opting? Co-opting and blocking, what's the difference? I mean, you're co-opting it in order to prevent something from doing what it's intended
what
to do. Blocking does the right thing.
What I'm saying is that from PDA standpoint, me being that I am one of the pro-choice presidents, I can tell you that when we that a lot of the reason stuff stopped or got real slow is because we faced insurmountable resistance from the Democratic Party. And the thing was that you had people wondering inside of each county or congressional district where we were saying, okay, we got a Democratic Party over here, and then we got PDA. And PDA's whole thing was to work inside and outside the party. So as we attempted to work inside the party, which is where the majority of this, where we were told to get the majority of our strength from, there was a split some of that up. We were getting massive resistance because people were like, the people who were truly active and wanted to do something were feeling burnt out because the party had so much stuff going on. Now you got stuff going on, and some of it don't seem like it jives. So people started pulling back and saying, okay, I don't know which way to go. So then what's going on now, and a lot of people don't realize this, and I can't get too deep into it, is that there's a change of strategy going on. And this is even coming from PDA National. They're trying to restructure how we're doing in the South because it has been such a hard move. It's not been a co-op. It has been a block. The Democratic Party has been pushing back against us because, one, we were supporting people like Bernie. So we were getting pushed back. It hadn't been a co-op necessarily. It's been a block. So you go
it hasn't been a block. They just dropped us. I mean, in Georgia, PDA, people go, PDA, what is that?
A lot of people are living on
professional benefits
of
America.
In their backyards. A lot of folks are working on stuff in their backyards that are going on. I mean, it ain't necessarily that we've all gotten to the strength that we can operate at a state level yet. Some people are still operating in their town, still trying to do stuff.
You talking about PDA?
Yeah, PDA.
You talking about PDA?
Yeah.
Now, PDA in other states, there are some, and let me make this disclaimer, there are some PDA groups in other states outside of the South who are doing that. But I have to question whether or not PDA was ever for Bernie in the first place. Was PDA co-opted?
There has not been a major change in the leadership. And a lot of
because
those
one thing,
but you have to realize there's also campaign finance laws. There was only so much that we could do after we spent the top dollars we could spend, being the pack that how we were set up. And I was told this early on that we were going to have to push our people into other organizations to help out to get what we needed done because PDA had moved as far as it could possibly move. We were told this, and so you got to also realize that sometimes when you see people stop doing work, it's not because they don't want to do the work anymore. There may be finance cases. There might be finance laws that we're trying not to break. There may be actual resources that take to be done.
When it comes to finance, I'm not talking about fundraising. I'm talking about actions to build the movement. I'm talking about election get out the vote actions that are traditionally done. There was none of that done by PDA or anyone else in Georgia.
Not in Georgia, because you got to look at PDA in the South. PDA in the South, just like a lot of other progressive organizations, has not taken our life. California. This is not New England.
This is how the South has consistently won. This is part of that machine. And you know this, Scout. This is part of that machine that not only...
We get mad because we're not moving as progressively as we would want the South to move, but you got to also realize is that the South, as much as people, progressivism in the South, everything in the South looks different than it looks everywhere else. You got to still understand.
Well, then why do I keep hearing in the media about how Georgia, why is Stacey Abrams and everybody telling us?
You got to look at
that. So why is it we're hearing all this media about how Georgia, you know, you're saying this. You and I know what it looks like on the ground, but if you watch the media, you got Rebecca Hart on CNN, executive director of the Georgia Dems. You got Stacey Abrams, House Minority Leader. It's a great day in Georgia.
We're
changing, which we hear it about as much as the same as when we heard that Hosea feed the hundreds of money and Grady broke.
They're talking DPG. They're two different separate organizations. And see, you got them, the both of them organizations actually have, they're not working together. They not even trying. It's very hard for them to work together because they have different
things. So how are you going to unify the people if y'all ain't unified? And how do we identify, we got Democrat in our name. Okay, so you're saying that this party is not part of that party. Then this party, sounds like y'all need to consolidate.
But PDA is a pack. And actually, PDA is a pack, and they are supporting progressive.
I know what PDA is.
Okay, but I'm saying that I'm just making sure that the listeners understand.
The constraints of a pack, what it's constrained to do, its constrictions are only really down to what the coordination with the campaign and how it raises money. But there's more. PDA is much more than that. And what I'm saying is that the other part is not what we've seen in PDA. But we have
we're trying to be different. If we're trying to be different than what the rest of the so-called establishment operations are doing, then we're not going to do the same things that everybody is using as the metrics to say that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. And then when
you can't have any metrics because they're not doing anything because they've been co-opted. And they're performing exactly as they have been designed to by those who have co-opted them. They're not doing anything because they're designed not to do anything. Move on thing because they're not designed to do anything. Now, Bold Progressives, I will say they too have been co-opted, but the one thing I can say about Bold Progressives is that they did train some candidates and they're trying to fill a bench. Renita Shannon is one of those graduates that came out of the Bold Progressive training. So, but Bold Progressives has also been co-opted because all of these groups, after the election, they were like, okay, we're going with the Dems. You know, that nice little revolution you had, I'm glad you got that out your system. Now come to your senses.
But you got also the people have strategic goals, and you play with who your strategic goals are met up with. And a lot of people will tell you that going to the Greens are not going to meet their strategic goal. If the Greens really had a strategic goal in mind, they would stop running candidates for president and start running on city councils and county commissions. They would go out here and start getting the petition signed so they could run on a local level in every state in the union and get their ballot access. That's what they would do.
But you know what? I agree with you on that. The Greens should have been running people, right? But then let's keep in mind, we want to talk about structural barriers that affect, you know, such as redistricting, like the GOP did. Let's talk about the structural barriers that Greens and other third parties face because of the control by both the Democrats and Republicans.
Okay.
Neither one of those parties want a third party.
The libertarians have started to play this game, and they've started to play the game until they can change the game. You all, every chance the libertarians get, they got somebody out there filling out them doggone petitions to get on the ballot.
I agree with you, Scout. The Green Party should have done that. But this is not a structural plan. This is not about having a long-term structural plan, but it may be important for those who want to be with the Green Party. I may be voting for the Green Party candidate. That doesn't mean I'm joining the Green Party. I'm just using my options.
Right.
Now,
but the same thing
you're saying that the Green Party needs, the Democrats need, because y'all lack it too. Y'all are running people. When I went to go vote, a lot of the races were unchallenged.
And that needs to change.
So don't talk to me about the Green Party and their problems when y'all need to put a mirror up to your own self. Y'all talking to the co-ops and stuff.
But in some places,
this is Kenyette. I actually have to agree with Stacey on that point, because I'm going to tell you, this is probably, at least in the state of Georgia, the most lackluster cycle I've seen of Democratic candidate. It is lackluster. It is lackluster. Other than House District 59, all the other, and maybe 63, so many districts that had Democratic candidates, the candidates were questionable at best. So I agree. We're quick to talk about. But hear me out. We are quick to talk about alternative parties and challenging them to put up credible candidates. And I have to really say that we need to also look at ourselves as, first of all, I'm a progressive. I'm not a Democrat. So my thing is this. The Democratic Party really needs to take a hard look at itself, because there are some candidates at the state level that really should not be on these ballots. And if they get into the General Assembly, they're going to be grossly ineffective. So I think, you know, that's a criticism that really could be levied across the board. That's kind of what I want to say on that one.
That comes down to culture, because in a lot of places, people have seen stuff operate for so long the same way that they think that's the way it's supposed to operate. And so if somebody comes in and says, oh, no, that's not how it's supposed to operate, then you get accused of what? Co-opted. This is one of those situations when you've been co-opting the situation that might actually be good if somebody's getting some of these local parties and getting to the state parties and co-opt their shit and move it back into competitive races. Then that's a good damn co-op. And that's what we're talking about. We talk about Susan and Alexia running for post holders over in Fulton County. That is a good move. That is a chance for people to get in seats, and they're going to start affecting the party from the lowest level and start pushing up. Them are two young ladies that I believe once they get in there and they start doing their better, change some things. But you also got to look at the people who run, because a lot of the time the parties are not cultivating candidates. Candidates are cultivating candidates. You got to look at the people.
We talked earlier about power conceiving nothing, right? So if you're coming, and we're talking about the Bernie campaign and how that came in, and it was seen how Democrats got their backs up because they knew Bernie's campaign and his supporters were coming in to change, and they wouldn't want change. So for these who were coming in on the local level, why would the Democratic Party act any different towards them than what they did on the national level? Because they're trying to do the same exact thing that the Bernie campaign did too. So don't you think that the executive committee and the rest of the power structure above these locals are sitting there, they're going to let y'all be the meth labs of democracy?
Listen,
they will leave you right there. They ain't going to bother with it until y'all start cutting the heads off of these. Y'all got to come up from all sides and squash them in the middle.
Okay, this is why
Keep fighting them from the bottom, they're going to kill y'all on the hill, just like they did at the convention. Y'all, the Democrats died on the hill that day.
And I'm going to explain to you what happens. Every time new people come in and they meet resistance, and this is a problem that I have seen only from the left. And remember, I've been on the right and I've been on the left. And this is only something that I see that happens on the left. And maybe because progressive folks are passive aggressive or something, I don't know what the hell it is. But if you had people, when people come in at the bottom on the right and they start pushing, they get resistance, they fight back harder. On the left, when people start pushing back, all you hear is whining and fucking crying. Oh, this ain't fair. No, they need to stop. That's why I believe in these two young ladies.
But you're advocating these people to do a tactic that you just chose this thing on.
And every time we lose the battle, we cry and we holler and we whine and we don't pull up our damn britches and get back in the fight, we're going to continue to get our ass kicked. Because politics, again, and I say it in every show we have these type of conversations, politics is warfare without bloodshed. So you can't, every time you get popped and you get pushed back, you can't go whine, you can't go cry, you can't sit there and talk about this shit ain't fair, you can't do that because warfare ain't fucking fair. You got to get
back
up,
push
back again,
who's in this war? I'm not in a war with anybody. I'm letting the Democrats, whoever they're in a war with, you go ahead. I'm not on the team.
Yeah, I'm not a part of your truth.
But you're telling these people. So you're pushing, and all we do is whine and we complain and we talk about how it ain't foul, and then we don't go back and fight. We go home and we take our ball with us. We will continue to lose. That's how the fucking Republicans got it. That's how you get these establishment Democrats. Because they got
sick of
things.
Don't get your blood pressure up, son. Okay, well, on the same token, we hear about we going to war, right? But you know what? We want to fight, you know, we want to use the Duchess of Queensberry rules. You know, we want it to be a civilized war. You know? So you want to dictate, and you're telling these people to go into these local committees and do the same thing. That Republicans do, right?
Well, you know,
you got to do it just like the damn Patriots did on the
You need to come in and keep it 100. You need to keep it consistently 100.
This
is not Game of Thrones, Scout.
Now, hear me out for 2 seconds.
Game of Thrones is a TV show. It's not real life.
This is why we don't get it.
Scout, there's a difference between a strategic victory and a pyrrhic victory. And I think when we're talking about politics, we can't always go for bloodshed. Just because they do it,
I'm not talking about bloodshed.
We can't do it.
I said, without bloodshed, but when I'm talking about getting up and fighting and whining and complaining, this is what I've seen since I joined the Democratic Party. New people come in, they get their damn feelings hurt, and they run their asses home. And then they complain about how bad the Democratic Party is. But I stayed in here, and I fought, I pushed, I done played the game like they have to play, and I get what I need done. Because I don't run home, I don't whine, I don't cry, and I don't complain. I fight the fuck back. Okay? And that's what needs to happen. If Donald Trump people want to take their ass home and do that, they do that. But if you truly wanted this revolution, if you truly wanted it, and you thought and you know that the Democratic Party has a foot in the door, you take the path of least resistance. And you push that. But no, you want to go off and do something else. It's just like in any other movement we get here. People lose, they go home, they
Hold up. You just said take the path of least resistance. But what you're telling me is the for progressives, unless we conform, that would be the path of most resistance. So you're confused.
They're not wanting it.
The Democrats are wanting. The progressives are taking the ball, and they're taking their ball and moving it to another playing field. You mad because it's not your field they choose.
No, but what I'm saying, that's not how you play the game. The rules have been the same for 5,000 years. It just went from rocks to computers. That's all it did. The rules never changed. And that's the problem with a lot of people.
The rules never changed. But nobody said the rules meant there were two players on the field, and that's where y'all got it twisted.
Right.
Y'all thought the rules always meant there were two players on the field. Those were rules y'all made up.
But the rules are the same. If we go... Politics in England, the only difference to politics in Great Britain and in America is the fact they got multiple problems, but the same shit goes down. The same shit happened that goes down here plays off in Afghanistan. It just plays off at a different technological level. We think because we live in America, all the shit that shit is different. It is,
Because we can talk about rules. We can talk about rules and what used to be rules and what was right, what was, well, it was the rule.
Right.
You know, we can go about that slavery used to be the rule, wasn't it, right?
Before we even gained our freedom, the rules were still the rules, and we had to play by those rules to get where we was. We might have thought we didn't, but we did.
You keep playing by the rules. What are the rules that are designed to oppress and keep you down? Are the rules still right? What are you saying?
And everybody who's in history who has ever said they were that way to get in power and do the exact same thing. Look at the damn Israelis. The Israelis
have the power, they took it.
Wiped out, and now they're doing the same damn thing to the Palestinians. In regards, when you're on the back end of the damn, when you're on the front end of the rifle, you complain it's unfair. But the moment you get on behind the butt of that bitch, and it's still the same. So we can trade it the same rules. The oppressed will say, oh, my God, this is unfair. Then they get in power, and they become the oppressors. It's the same damn cycle over and over again. So what people think they're talking about, what the rules are, in the name of power. We understand the laws of power. This will succeed.
So what's your proposed solution?
I just think y'all mad because we ain't playing
and
on your field.
I ain't mad. But what I am is I'm frustrated because I keep people talking about the thing is, if you want to see change, understand one thing, that when you get in, if you happen to get in power, be cognizant that you're probably going to do the same shit. Be cognizant of that because no human being is higher or greater than any other. We are truly equal. So if you are going to, once you get power in your hand, be cognizant that you may do the same thing. You might not do it as bad. You might have a good reason or intent behind it, but you will do the same damn thing.
And you know what you sound like? You sound like white people who are scared when blacks or people of color become a majority, and that we're going to do the same thing that they did to us. And anyone who has lived under oppression, anyone who has lived under that type of pain, who has any bit of humanity or decency, would not do that. They would do it a different way. And we're not trying to get back. We're not trying to get power to be vindictive. Because that's what the two parties do. We are victims of your anger and your rage and your vindictiveness.
That's not color. It is human nature. Regardless of you're black, you're white, you're Asian, it is human nature. It has nothing to do with black and white. And that's another problem we keep having because every time we have an argument like this, oh, we can't do that because the white people do it. Well, the white people learned it from somebody damn else because they asses were living in caves when we were building damn universities. But they learned how to damn do it. And once upon a time, we did it. Because, hell, if you listen to the whole tip, brother,
but aren't
the
you following what someone else has done that hasn't been that hasn't worked in your favor? You're duplicating the oppressors, too. I think you have Stockholm syndrome, dude.
Hey, guys, I actually got a roll. This has been so amazing.
All right, Kenya, you take care. And we're coming up. We're getting ready to end up.
So, but it was a conversation. This is why I call out to take place.
It was interesting.
Somebody else could have came in and took over.
No. No, it was just the way it was supposed to be, like that song said, supposed to be. It was exactly the way it was supposed to be. So.
But, I mean, real though, but there's a lot of that type of stuff that's going on out there, folks. I mean, we have an organization, you got to have vigorous debate, but you got to be paying attention to what's going on around you, because if you don't, somebody's going to come up in there real quietly and take over your organization while you're vigorously debating. So be careful for it. Be watching out for it. Watch your backs, people, because we can win, but we got to be vigilant.
And don't let the smooth taste fool you.
Thank you, because folks will lie to you to get what they want. So you've got to
is the truth.
Yeah, you can be on different sides of a situation, but pay attention to the person who ain't saying shit in the room. Because they
Just do like I do and side-eye everybody.
you know, side eye every damn body. But for y'all progressives out there who just got mad at me for telling y'all that y'all whining and crying and doing it, you know you are.
We're not.
Because
we're not mad. We're not mad, yeah. Scout. We're busy. We're not mad.
Yeah,
we're busy.
A lot of folks quit.
We're not mad.
They just quit. They
no,
just
we're
quit.
Not
they
mad.
Quit. No, some of them will actually be mad, but they will tell you shit like, fuck you, I hate you, this, that, and the other. Okay. Really?
Right, but that's a minority. That's not the majority of progressives. Majority of progressives, you're doing the same thing that other people do. You're taking the minority and projecting it as
a
majority. Most of the progressives I know are getting busy. And if you notice, progressives are winning races across the country. So progressives are busy. We're not mad. We're winning races.
The loudest ones are the ones we're hearing whining. Because the rest of us are going off doing what we got to do. I haven't complained about none of this shit. Keep it pushing. Because we got races to win locally. We ain't got time to be sitting there crying. I'm not doing shit because the fucking you didn't get who you wanted for your presidential nominee. Your backyard is still open. Go work in your backyard.
Well, I would suggest that Democrats get busy because according to the numbers, Democrats are still losing more seats than Republicans nationally. So if that is true, then Democrats ain't on their game and they need to get busy. Eat your weed.
Exactly. And do not allow the numbers that we're seeing coming across the media to think, y'all, we got this shit in Georgia in hand. That shit is only going to become true is if we keep pushing. If y'all want Georgia to go blue, you got to push. This shit ain't just the numbers ain't just going to the numbers ain't going to the damn polls to go vote. So everybody get that. This is down south and dirty, and we're out.
Peace.